You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show. Woo!
Hey everyone, I just shared the other day a podcast that was an interview I did for Synapse with Signs, and here's one I did a couple days prior to that with first base runner, Austin-based singer-songwriter with a really cool sound, really cool vibe. I think you guys will dig them, and again, I wanted to share it with all my listeners because I thought you would appreciate it. Enjoy.
For it while I'm recording now before it goes bad again.
Sure, that sounds good.
So I've covered your music for my personal website, The Farsighted, a few times, or at least once or two. And I also do a lot of film writing, and the film site I write for is called Synapse, and they're actually based in Austin, oddly enough, which is I was just down there with these guys a few weeks ago. We went to, I won't remember the name of the bar, but one little bar, and I enjoyed myself. You have quite a few of them, so saying a fun little bar doesn't really narrow it down.
Yeah. Who knows, like downtown or where?
I'll actually look it up in a little bit to remind myself and tell you.
Cool.
But yeah, so, and actually, we first flew into Austin. I'm a big Eagles fan. I'm from the Philly area. And so the first thing I did, because we got there and we couldn't find any way to listen to the game, I looked up Eagles Bar, this little place. And there's another name I'll forget. Jeez. Over by this bypass, this little dingy little dirt bar. It had a back room decked out in Eagles gear, because I guess they're big Eagles people. I was like, oh! but yeah, I was only in Austin for a day on my way to see my sister in Corpus.
So, yeah. That's odd. That's where I grew up, in that area. So yeah.
Oh, very funny. Yeah, my little sister lives in Corpus. I grew up in North Jersey actually, but I've been down in the Philly area since college. So.
Okay. Yeah, my wife, she lived in the Poconos in Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah, well,
that's where she grew up.
I say in the Philly area because most people don't know, but I'm actually like an hour north of Philly, so I'm only about an hour and a half south of the Poconos. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
We have family houses up there that I go vacation in. It's nice.
Cool.
So, yeah, so I just wanted to kind of set up what we're talking about. And because it's a film site, the reason I reached out to you versus some of the other artists is because you clearly have a very cinematic vision in what you do musically.
Thank you. I went to film school.
Oh, okay.
I never wanted to move to LA or New York. I did live in Denver for quite a while, but mostly have lived in Austin, you know. But maybe some things bleed through musically in that way. But I went to UT for film, so.
Very cool. And so besides that, and obviously you've had recently some much lauded, right? I see that they're getting some big play as far as I think you won an award for one of them, if I remember correctly.
Maybe somewhere. I'm not sure. I don't
claimed. I'm reading a book about it. So
yeah, I don't run a lot of the direct stuff. So we have a good little team though, and they kind of post and track stuff, and sometimes they see stuff and sometimes I just don't. But it's okay, you know. But I mean, we've certainly been lucky to work with people like Dilly and Matt, and Heather is another great one that we just worked with. So yeah, it's just kind of it's a good group of people, I think, like-minded people. So it seems to have some level of synchronicity to it on its own, you know?
Yeah, very cool. So that said, just to kind of talk a little bit about films. I know you're now film. Obviously, you're a film guy. Well, obviously, besides making music, you obviously like film if you went to film school. So yeah. What inspired you to go to film school? What were some of your movies that struck you, some of the stuff that really got you into that?
Well, let's see. What would that have been? I always liked all the weirdo kind of, I don't know if you would say like transcendental sort of film, and or I was always into documentaries, things like that. I think one of my favorite things was just still photography, like old school, and you develop your own film, so you shoot 35 or medium format. So I was super into photography and like people like Diane Arbus, and I always kind of approach film school from an audio standpoint. So I always wanted to be the guy that was like doing the Foley or that was doing field recordings or things like that, or perhaps doing a soundtrack, scoring film. But it is fun to be in front of the camera too, but I think it's, I always like the technical aspects of it more, I think, especially the audio part, you know.
How long have you been
using music? Oh, gosh. Since, like, Vietnam or something. I don't know.
A bit in Vietnam.
Making music, I've probably been doing that for over 25 years, something like that.
So this project's kind of, like, more or less solo, right? I mean, I guess you might have other artists that contribute, but it's kind of your brainchild.
Yeah, it is. We've also been putting together a live group, so I'm really excited about that. The guys are just doing a great job, and the hope is that's the live group. I don't want to change. There's a lot of bands that kind of change people in and out with every record or every tour. The idea is to build up something long term and have those long term relationships there, and kind of I think you end up in a much better space creatively when you treat people more equitably like that. So because I've been in other situations where you go and you tour and you play these shows, and then it's like, okay, here's the payout. Well, you got paid $2,000 or something, but you're cut because you're just the drummer. You make $100 or $150 for the night. And over time, I think that kind of makes people, what's the right word? I suppose a little disenchanted or maybe resentful. So the idea is to have something more equitable with people and sort of like be invested in the live group too. And hopefully that will translate over into the musical recording side as well, too, as time goes on. So, but we're just barely kind of wading into that at the moment.
I'm a big fan of a lot of Rive. One band I was really into, especially in college, and we kind of followed them, Say Anything. Familiar with the band Say Anything?
Pop Say Anything, yeah. Yep.
It reminds me of what you're saying of how they kind of started, because Max was all kind of his thing, and the friends of his that he brought along into his touring group became the actual band. So like, after an album or two, he wasn't recording himself doing everything anymore. It was the whole band recording. So that's kind of your vision to get them more involved. Collaboration.
Yeah, something similar to that. Because then everyone feels more invested in the project. And, you know, I mean, long and short of it is you need those people when you go and play out, and you need, that's the sound, you know, so you have to find people you trust, which is super hard, you know. I mean, it's a mess out there. But we have a good chemistry going right now, and I think it will take us some other interesting places, you know. just by including the rest of everyone on the ride, you know. So.
So like the music video that really, like I said, seem to be kind of part of your because they don't seem like an afterthought, you know. I feel like that's part of like, the visual aesthetic to what you're doing musically, which makes sense as somebody who's been in the film. Do you do the videos yourself? Do you have a team, or do you have a specific director you work with?
So we've been lucky enough to have Diligent sign on as our creative director for the life of the project. She's just really passionate about things in that way, and she's been incredibly helpful. And she's hyper visual, but I think the two of us work well together. So when there is a new song or a new idea, we kind of work with we work with Dilly's sort of brainstorming, and then she kind of reaches out to different directors, and then different directors will pitch different ideas, and then it sort of turns into a real collaborative effort, I would say. Or at least the better projects always do, because then it's everyone feels like they have a say, and everyone trusts everyone in terms of the vision and guidance of it. So Dilly's sort of like an executive producer, I guess. And so her hand is kind of always there in the background, you know, in one way or the other. And then this last time we worked with Heather Gilroy, and she's a younger director. She's done a lot of commercial photography. Killer photographer, really cool director too. Lots of different and interesting ideas. So that was a lot of fun as well. So the last time I was in LA was a few months ago, and we did two music videos with Heather. And so there will be another one coming out, I think, like the end of January, early February, somewhere thereabouts. So it should be pretty interesting, you know.
That is really cool. You know, like I said, I really enjoyed your videos. I honestly just really enjoy your music as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. And so, you know, I said, from the moment I turned it on, even before I read, I always like to listen to what's sent to me to look at and stuff before I even read anything about the artist. At least went through, and then I start the artist and getting into the whole feel, because I just want to get a feel for how I feel on music automatically. And I felt like your music was very cinematic. Like it really felt that to me. And for you to tell me you have a film background is not at all surprising. It just feels like that.
Yeah.
You said you've always seen yourself more in that. You like the sound and the stuff, which makes sense. That kind of blends in. And you'd love to, you know, score. Have you ever gotten a chance to score any film besides your own videos, obviously?
Besides like college projects, no, I haven't actually scored any larger film. I did some commercial work when I was living in Denver, so I got to do some things for like airlines and that kind of stuff. And I had some couple of pieces went into some other people's videos. So I mean, I guess in a roundabout way I have, but I haven't scored like directly in that way. And commercial work is kind of soul crushing, so I decided I wouldn't do that anymore. So I just wanted to quit. It made me too jaded, you know.
It's one of those things that commercial work tends to pay better, and
mm-hmm.
but it is soul crushing. I get that.
You know, yeah.
Talking about film, my cousin who I grew up really close to is a professional editor on doing corporate training videos and such. That's what she does for her career. She always wanted to edit and direct film, and she did a few independent films, actually lost money. Like she had to put money in to be part of them, even though she was supposedly getting cuts.
Yeah.
No cuts because there was no money.
Yep.
Right. You know. So ultimately, you know, she spent money on getting software, doing things, and never actually got paid back. But she loved the experience.
Mm-hmm.
The corporate work that got to get paid for her family to live. You know. So it's kind of you know, and so I get that, you know, it's kind of the, how can you make ends meet, you know, with doing what you love?
Exactly.
So I guess, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing, but I mean, you know, I think the hope would be, to get sync and something decent, which I think that will come about. But I don't want to be like in a, you know, whatever. There's good sync and there's bad sync. So like a decent film or a short film or a documentary, something like that would be great. But I don't want to be in a Chili's commercial, you know, like, because it's like, even though it pays, you know, it's like, yeah, it pays, but it's not like, you know, it's not the best of looks if you want to have more of a serious kind of trajectory, you know. So you got to wait a bit longer, I think, sometimes.
Unless you're like Moby, who's in every commercial, every movie, and every, that's kind of, you know, I guess that probably took him 20 years to get there, you know, so.
Yeah.
That said, do you have, like, do you ever watch a movie and think, man, I really wish I could score a movie for this director or style? Is there?
Yeah.
Who are some of the people that jump out for you like that?
I would say John Carpenter is certainly one. I mean, if we're going pie in the sky here, that's a great one. And
of course, he scores all his own stuff. Well, actually, he hasn't made a film in years, but
yeah,
he scored his own stuff for a long time. But do you vibe with his music a lot?
I like it quite a bit, actually. It's interesting. Another one that I really like the music on, well, there's a few, but I would say outside of John Carpenter, there's Coppola did Koyaanisqatsi, which is that weird time lapse film that was shot almost all in New York, but it's about like old Hopi prophecy about technology and the end of the world. So there's no words in the whole film, but it's just time lapses of people moving through the city and like computer circuit boards and sky rise buildings. And Philip Glass scored that one.
Okay.
And it's, that one's really cool. I would say another one would probably be, oh, let me think about this. I would say Sergio Leone, Western guy, spaghetti Western king, you know, has since passed on, but those are cool, you know.
Not that I would ever necessarily advocate for being a Morricone score or something, but you know, it'd be cool to hear the kind of music you do in like a spaghetti Western. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes when you're looking at things, though, you can sit and watch footage, and what you end up writing doesn't necessarily sound like your sound, because it like it kind of changes the way you, or at least it changes the way like I would hear something, you know, or what I would play, or when I would hit a certain key or do something, you know. But yeah, those would be a few that I like a lot. Werner Herzog is another one. I enjoy a lot of his films as well.
Yeah, I mean, those are all guys that'd be awesome to work with, for sure.
Yeah. It would be fun.
Documentaries and weird offbeat films, you know, so what? I think he put one out last year, so.
Yeah.
Still doing it. You know, maybe you have your chance one day with Werner. He might be like 95 by the time you do it, but, you know. He's pretty old right now, right? He's got to be in his 80s.
He's got to be getting up there at this point.
Do you get a chance to watch a lot of films in general? Are you a big film watcher? I know that Austin's a film watching city, that's why I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a normal year I probably watch about, there's like 2 to 4 movies that I really want to see, and then everything else I'm kind of like, oh, I'll watch it at the house, or I'll explore, go down some rabbit trails, you know.
Whatever.
Yeah. But in terms of like modern movies coming out, there's not a whole lot that I feel the need to necessarily go to the theater for, unless like the Draft House is something, you know, sometimes they show older films that are pretty interesting, you know.
Yeah, the website, you know, Synapse, goes through the draft a lot. They're all fantastic investors and all that. I've been trying to make it to get down and join them to fantastic investors in the next couple of years. So I'm hoping.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We have we don't have a draft house nearby me in Philly, but I've been to the one up in Yonkers, New York. So I've been to one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sounds like they really expanded a lot. I know they were franchising and all that, so that's pretty crazy. But because whatever, not to date myself, but I can remember when there was only one of those in Austin.
Is the one the one on South Bar or whatever? Is that the one? Yeah, that's what. I think, you know, very cool. Just curious, since you said there's only a few movies a year, were there any this year that stood out at you, like you really wanted to see, and where did they deliver, or not so much?
This year, I'm trying to think. There wasn't. I'm kind of a weird guy in that way. Trying to think of more recent ones that I've seen that I really liked. The Lighthouse might qualify, I think.
Yeah, that's
Willem Dafoe. I think that was this year.
That was, I think it came out last year, but yeah, that was I think that's a pretty big thumbs up from our website. I'm the dissenting voice that was not a fan. I'm not an art house. I have to admit, I get yeah. My attention span is not quite there. I've never been diagnosed, but I probably am ADHD. I do struggle with slower paced movies a lot of times, and that's clearly a movie. I mean, I'm wearing an Elm Street shirt at the moment. I'm a bit of an older guy myself.
Yeah.
So when you said Carpenter, my eyes lit up. Although I really Carpenter, I actually like him most when he's at his weird fantasy stuff as opposed to his straight up horror stuff. Like, I love Big Trouble in Little China,
yeah.
They Live, even action stuff like Escape from New York. I mean, those are my favorite stuff. Is.
How about The Thing? Do you like The Thing?
Funny, it seems that most people either love The Thing or Halloween as their favorite Carpenter movie. Yeah. I've been a Halloween guy, and I loved The Thing until the last few years because my one son fell in love with. And so now I've watched it probably 6 times in 4 years.
Uh-huh.
And it went from I don't really love it to I think I kind of love it.
Yeah.
And it's part of that, he called it the Apocalypse Trilogy, even though they're like loosely based. They're not really, stories aren't related, but they're all about the end of the world, kind of.
Uh-huh.
The other two films in the Apocalypse Trilogy a lot. Like, I'm a real big Prince of Darkness guy, which is funny because that's actually just as slowly paced, and you know, but I'm also a Victor Wong. I love him as an actor, so that particular movie's always been there. And then in Out the Madness, I love Sam Neill and watching him just unravel and go nuts for me. So I've now come around that The Thing has fully become one where I can see all three of those movies I love. It took a while. I have to admit, like, for some reason, I think it's, again, the pacing. You know, I've said struggle with slow pacing, and that movie is very slow at points, but it's full of dread, you know? Like,
Yeah,
never comfortable. You're always uncomfortable watching that movie.
Yeah. Do you like the Alien movies?
Oh, so, yeah. We are a big Alien household. My wife's favorite of all time is the first Alien. My favorite of all time. We're both on the side of very pro Prometheus. We really love the world building in Prometheus, so that's one of our favorites too. Right next to the computer screen I'm staring at is a big Alien sticker on the wall. I can't find her to show you. It is. You have to believe me.
So yeah,
Alien's a big one for us. Yeah.
Yeah, we really loved Prometheus as well. But my wife is super into all the Alien movies, so.
Well, I'm a pastor's kid, so religious content and like weird warping of religious mythos is so in my wheelhouse.
That
the way that he builds that whole, there's such a strong faith element in that movie that it just like creator creation stuff just really gets me. Every time I watch it, I pick out another layer and go, oh. Wow, you know,
yeah.
And to me, I love Ridley Scott when he's doing the weird things like that the most. There was a TV, he had a TV show come out on HBO Max last year. I hope we'll get the second season this coming year, I believe. And of course, I'm going to forget the name. Raised by Wolves. And okay. It feels like it's in, even though it's not in the same world as Alien, it feels really built in that same mold as Prometheus and Up.
That's cool.
It's a great show for me.
Yeah. No, I love shows like that. It's more, it's just kind of thinking on multiple levels is always interesting, you know, and it's especially in terms of like who's really creating whose reality, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, where it's all about like life, and then there's also robots that are actually raising kids in it. So there's like which one's more real, which one's more, you know, it's very, doesn't matter if AI can actually be more humane than, you know, that goes.
Sure.
Oh God, it's really interesting to me, you know, because I also have a weird perspective because I'm a pastor's kid, but I work in the Department of Corrections, so I have this really interesting world experience that automatically comes into everything I think about. So
yeah, for sure,
without a doubt. So yeah, so you know, kind of veering back towards your music a little bit, just. What do you have going on right now that you want people to check out that I should be like, yo, definitely check out this thing because it's what you're looking for them to check out. I'll also be plugging the stuff that I love. I'll be saying, I check out this, you know. So I'm just curious, what do you got going on?
Yeah, Ellis just came out, the new EP. So there's a video that just came out for that called Man Overboard. And it's all underwater. And that was...
Dude, that looks insane to me. Watching that video, I'm like, oh, man, how did they do this?
Well, the DP, she had to wear scuba all day.
Wow.
And so she was in a full scuba outfit. And then I would just... Essentially, my main job was to go back underwater and hold your breath as long as you can. And then... But it was all day, and then you get out and you change into dry clothes and like eat a salad, and then you change back into your wet clothes, and then you get back in the pool. So, but it was really fun, and it was just a bunch of really great people there, you know. So it was, it just had that feeling like no one had an ego, and everyone was just kind of on the same wavelength and worked really hard at it. So, yeah, that was really, that was an interesting one. The other one that'll be coming out at the end of this month is for the first track on Ellis. It's called Near Me. And that one was filmed at the Broken Spoke in Austin, which is the old sort of honky tonk that somehow the building's still standing. But it's like when you go to the Broken Spoke now, it's like two massive condos. And then the Broken Spoke like sits in their shadow. So it's kind of like that video has more of a different vibe to it. So it's sort of like if you're almost like you're hallucinating or something and you're trying to figure out what's real and what's not real.
We didn't get into some of that, but I do like kind of the mind fuck stuff going on with movies, you know, the what's real and what's not, and so to see it, the music video play with that would be fun. I've always enjoyed, you know, I probably part of the reason I like a lot of the more weird stuff on like a David Lynch film.
He does
a lot of weird what's real and well, and even the stuff that's clearly real is still weird. You know, stuff like that, and so I definitely vibe that. That's really cool. It sounds like, you know, not a single one of your videos is going to be some simple you're just singing in front of a camera video. That's not your thing.
Not really. It's got to have a bit more. So it's just, as time goes on, you're essentially, what we're trying to do is you're building a catalog of your work and your collaborative efforts with all these other directors and talented people as well. And then you have a body of work. So the main goal right now is to just stay prolific and get to the live shows. We'll start having live shows this year. perhaps in March, depending on how everything goes. But I don't see why not. So, and then I think we'll be making...
You have to let me know, because I'll be there.
You know? Cool.
But the people from the website, I'm going to also go see you down in office. Yeah, they're not going to an excuse. I'm going to give them a hard time if they don't go out.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. So, and I think, you know, once we get that component of it going, we'll have even more momentum. Because you have to be live, because to be live is to be made real, I think. So until you're out playing live, it's kind of like, well, that's cool, or that's a nice video. But until, you know, you're actually face to face in that moment, it changes a lot of things, you know. So
I mean, between the pandemic and the fact that I have a 13-year-old and 10-year-old, even before the pandemic, I used to go out to, honestly, two live shows a week in college.
Yeah.
Maybe more weeks. And then, you know, after college, my wife and I, was just two of us, we probably still went out twice a month to see live. I got to my first live show since pre-pandemic just last week. And my God, I forgot how amazing it is to connect with the music live. You know,
yeah.
It really does make a difference.
It's a weird spiritual thing if it's done right. It can be, you know, it can be really powerful in that way. So hopefully, you know, things will keep going in the right direction, because I think, you know, I know I've missed it, that's for sure. You know, just even that being an option, you know.
You know, just because now I'm intrigued thinking about live music. Not just live, though. Your sound is clearly a blend of a lot of different styles and genres. Who are some of your favorite
artists? Some of my favorite artists, like of all time or just currently?
Let's go all time and name a couple current.
Oh boy. Okay. All time. I can never say I have a favorite.
Fair.
Gosh. Okay. I'm going to have to throw Philip Glass in there.
Okay.
And then I would have to say I like a lot of varied things. So I really like a lot of the Black Lips stuff. And then I also love Aphex Twin. And
I can hear something like Aphex Twin in your music.
Yeah, just like the electronic, some of the electronic elements. Let's see. Black Angels are pretty fun. John Cale, Leonard Cohen. When I was growing up, a lot of Nine Inch Nails. Not. I don't listen to that very often anymore. But and I also like a lot of old blues and stuff like.
Four music. Some of his four.
To who's? Sorry.
Reznor's. That he does with Atticus Ross.
No, I haven't listened to that.
He scored, you know, obviously the big one that kind of was their big thing that they did first with Social Network, and then like tons of TV shows and movies they've been scoring the last few years. That's really what Reznor, I think, does as a career now. He doesn't really do Nine Inch Nails music. I'm curious just because I sometimes like some of his score more than even some of his Nine Inch Nails. I really love up to and including the Downward Spiral, and I kind of lost touch. There are choice songs and things I heard after from a soundtrack or from this, and I tend to like them, but I seek them out, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, I feel the same. I mean, it's not like I don't like it anymore. It's just kind of, I don't know. It ran its course, I think, you know?
I mean, I still throw Pretty Hate Machine on occasionally myself. But that's about, you know, it's a good workout album. Some of the harder tracks, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Can head like a hole and just go to town, you know.
So. Yeah. I'd also have to throw in some of the weirdo groups like from the 70s and 80s. But, well, I mean, I wouldn't say Depeche Mode is a weirdo group. That's pretty mainstream. But, Front 242 is a pretty cool one. Or Nitzer Ebb. or some of kind of like the early industrial electronic music. The beginning of that time period was really interesting. Fad Gadget's another one, Tones on Tail. Suicide was another one, but it's just kind of weird. I don't know. It's just early electronic music. So you're listening to these people struggle with these
things that were not really instruments yet or just became instruments. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 100 times easier to do it now.
Yeah,
and then one just shows up with the laptop or hits a button. But back then it was like, no, you got to take like 5 cents to the show. And they're all very fragile. Don't drop them.
Not at the exact time. And
yeah. Yeah. So, you know, but I do like a lot of that older stuff. And I suppose that's why I'm also prone to using just older synthesizers and things like that. I don't use
with some old analog stuff like that. Yeah,
I don't really use plugins or soft synths, any of that kind of stuff. It's like the old machines, you know, finicky things. But put it to you this way, like you turn on some of them and you have to wait for it to get warm for like 20 minutes, half an hour, at least 10 minutes, and then you have to tune it and then you can play it.
And then the problem is if it breaks, you probably can't charge, you have to basically make it yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to be pretty good with the soldering iron.
Yeah.
And willing to learn, you know, and sometimes it saved me, and other times it's like, man, I don't know, that one's too far gone, I can't fix it. So, you know, but it's just fun because it feels like a lot of those old instruments kind of have souls inside them, or they have a story to tell.
Right.
So when you hop on a different one, you might be working on a song, you don't hear it, and then finally you sit down in front of the right machine and it's like, oh, you were here all the time, you know. So that's also kind of cool, you know, just the discovery process, I think, is a lot of fun. So
yeah, and I mean, I think that connects a lot about Phil too, because I think of how like folk artists use the weirdest things in the world to get the sound that they want, you know, not only like old machines, but like looking around the house, like, oh, this banging this against this might make the sound I'm looking for. And they just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I think that it sounds like you have a lot of that spirit in you, you know, that same thing like a Foley artist would, you know,
totally.
Trying to make the sound you want in your head. You don't know stuff and to get it to come out, you know?
Yeah, it's its own weird thing. So, but it's always so much fun. And then it's like, but there's also a line. So once you hear it, you have to know that that's it. Because you can also just keep going. And it's so easy to do that now. And it's like, man, there's all this other clutter, all this other debris. Like, what was I even trying to say? Because you have so many terabytes of space. Just because you have the room doesn't mean you should use all of it, though, you know. So, but sometimes being subtractive is just as important as adding things in, you know. But it's always fun. So
there's a film editor in you right there, then, you know. Sometimes you got to put stuff on the floor in order for the movie to make sense and look good.
Yeah.
So there's so much about audio and visual work that I think just go hand in hand, you know. And like, you know, my, I brought up, I have a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old. My 13-year-old decided over the last 6 months that he now wants to be a film editor. That's what he wants to do. Cause he started with editing software on his iPhone. So now he got a PC that he saved up for mostly for gaming, because we're a Mac family, but you can't game on a Mac like the way he wants to. And so he got a PC, but now I'm finding all the PC equivalents of the programs I use on Mac so he can start messing with different things. And he's having a ball, you know, to edit, you know, his friend's little YouTube videos, and he's adding fun, funky things in. And for Christmas, they got my two boys together got a nice video camera. And it's amazing because my first video camera was on my shoulder like this, and my kids is barely bigger than my phone.
Yeah.
But it films in gorgeous 1080p with crystal clear sound. I'm like, oh my gosh. But
yeah, Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I remember the old school, the, you know, camera in a suitcase, weighs like 25 pounds, you know, and you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah, yeah. I said I was a pastor's kid. The first video camera I ever used was the church's one.
Yeah.
I got my own when I went to college, but I bought it at a pawn shop, so it was just as old. Even though it was the year 2000, I bought a camera from like 1989, mm-hmm. and I had this camera on my shoulder all summer, living on campus, filming things for fun, and oh my god, I still have the videos. We eventually digitized them, but they look horrible because it's all don't want to be not even a super VHS, a little VHS tape, you know, big VHS tape, you know.
It's
yeah, good time though. But yeah, man, so that's awesome. So I, you know, I encourage everybody to check out Ellis and check out what you got going on. I assume they can find you all over social media.
Yeah, it's on there. Just First Base Runner, 1ST Base Runner. It'll pop up on all the things. So
yeah, and the links will be here too. And they're so you guys can scroll down and see all the links.
Yeah, and I will have, well, towards the end of 2022, I already finished a stream of consciousness recording. There's going to be two other EPs coming out.
Okay.
But the next one, I know we just released Ellis, but we'll have another one. And that will be called Light Roars. And then, which is more kind of post-punk synth music. A little more upbeat, full band. I played all the drums and everything on it.
So fans, post-punk, new wave, like that kind of era, really dig that one.
I think so, yeah. And then Night Stalker will be coming out also next year, and that's the weird stream of consciousness. It sounds like music for a horror film, kind of. So we'll see.
Very cool. So a lot of different concepts and things to check out. Kind of get your brain a little bit, huh?
Yeah, you know, you just got to be prolific, and it's okay, you know, just keep creating.
Hey, well, thanks so much for the chat. And,
yeah.
For to talking more and hearing more. And I guess any final sign-off words for anyone watching?
No, it was wonderful to meet you. And thank you for your time. And I hope we can be in touch again soon.
Well, take care.
Okay, you too.